Accession number 30063, reel 10.
Mr. Reed, reel 10. We're talking about the inside of the tank and its capacity. What was its top speed?
Oh, it would do 30 miles an hour.
It was quite fast.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think that this was a factor that helped to save it, possibly, in an action situation?
No, might do, but the fact that it was, if you wanted to turn tail and start running, the person who was running away from must have had something that our tank was afraid of. And more often than not, the Germans used to come along with their heavy tanks, and we knew if they spotted you and got their sights on you, you'd have your chips. It would just blow your tank off. If you managed to get out and start running around, you're shot at anyway. So you reached the point of no return there.
How thick was its armour? Do you remember?
Not thick enough. I would think quarter of an inch, maybe half an inch in places, in vulnerable places, in front of the driver, say, for instance. But they weren't really, you know, they were fast tanks, and all they did, mainly, apart from fighting occasionally, all they did was get the information required. And then they all had to go together. The heavies came up and God knows what else and rolled in.
It was quite a dangerous situation. I mean, you were out in front there, as you say, reconnaissing, and you're going to be the first ones to hit them.
Yeah. Well, either that, but if you got where they were, you could let the bigger tanks know, and then you were off. You know, there was no point in trying to knock a Tiger tank out, of course, one of the Germans. The great big things, they were just sitting and laughing at you. You could sit there all day.
I think we touched on the subject, but how was the tank supplied? And you've got to have your petrol. Where was it coming from? And
all brought up by the RSC from. They used to bring enough in to fill your tank up, and the vehicle used to come round. You were there at the vehicle, and they give you the nozzle and you fill your tank up. That was it, filled. You fill your petrol cans up as much as you could, and of course on the back of the tank there was a rail, and you put your bedding on there, your bedding roll, water cans. You didn't want anything, you couldn't put anything inside. Once you had inside what we've just talked about there, there was no room. And we forgot my train of thought there.
Yeah, you were talking about petrol coming up.
Yeah,
in there,
petrol is to fill the petrol tanks up. And that was it. Ammunition, yes. Batteries, terrible to change. For 12 volts. Yeah, 12 volts. That size. You've seen them in the army, you must have done, with a wooden case on, and just two terminals, 12 volts. They had to be changed. Otherwise your radio was no good. And to take them out, in the turret itself, you had two seats, your guns and everything else, and underneath the floor of the turret were the batteries, which had to come out and get charged, new batteries which had been charged in. That was another job that they did back of the line during the day, charge all the batteries. So you had two charged batteries. And trying to get a bloody battery down in between the two seats, down that way and screwing, and then getting down, here we are surrounded here, to get down to try and put the leads onto the battery and tighten them up. What a hell of a bloody job, you know. So there's all those things, and they were all brought up to him.
Petrol tins, I think, did they tend to split or leak?
Oh, yeah. Some of them come
they weren't as good as the German.
I was going to come to that, but some of them used to be half full. So then what happened? The first time we took Germans over, or we did, we kept their cans, because you've obviously seen them now. ours were tin. That was all, just thin tin. And they used to stack them up in the vehicle, you know, maybe 300 or something like that. And with them shaking along like that, they used to leak. Germans, theirs was metal, sealed inside with plastic, a thick plastic. The outlet for them was the hole that you've seen now. You put the lid down and it snaps in, and that was their petrol carrier. Ours was just an ordinary hole, and you turned it up and all of it went on the sand. But we finished up, and I'll tell you later on about that, when the first SES comes along, with what they're called
jerry cans.
It's still called a jerry can today. And it hasn't changed from all those years. Now you're talking in terms of, well, from the war, aren't you? Say 1941. Now, say 1940, you're talking in terms of 67 years ago. And those things there were used day in, day out, hammered, knocked about, and the jerry cans were still going strong. And the ones we had didn't even reach the object that they were made for.
So you've joined your unit for the third Hussars, and you're in the adjutant's tank, and that's your particular responsibility. Now this was, I think you said, late 1941. It was near Mersa Matruwa, I think you said.
I forget the name. I mentioned it in there, I know. It's the end of the line for the railway.
What are your memories of what happened to you next?
From there.
From there, yeah.
The great big action that took place was where the 3rd Hussars were in the front line. They had taken... This is the first time we were, when I say the first time we were up the desert, because he used to be chasing it backwards and forwards. And the 3rd Hussars are up there. And it was then, it was early 1941, it must have been, or back just 1940, when the Germans got the tank. Mm.
So you're involved in that that advance, in effect, that ultimately relieved her, but you would be going on to El Agheila.
And we got there, and after a while, suddenly realising that it wasn't all honey there up there in the line, that there was an enemy there in front of us, and they were going to have a go, and we had to be prepared for them. So eventually they did have a go, and they chased the 3rd Hussars, and over the period of them leaving, they had a few hundred miles to get away here. They kept knocking 3rd Hussars tanks out. They knocked them out. If they didn't knock them out, they ran short of fuel, and if they ran short of fuel, they didn't have any ammunition left, or the wirelesses had broken down. So there was 3rd Hussars tanks lying all over the way they'd come down, and the Germans just pushed them out, and those hell let loose. Very few of them escaped.
And were you in this, is this prior to
this is when I went on leave, remember?
Oh, that's right, you went off for a fortnight.
Went off for a fortnight's leave, and Cosgrove? Yeah, Cosgrove, who was the fellow who used to do the job before me, had to come back and relieve me. And he was taken prisoner. I was in Cairo, whooping it up, if you like to put it that way. So you got back to Cairo as you could, if you could, by any means that was available. And you found, didn't know where you were going. I didn't know where I was going when I got to Cairo. I knew there was a Abbasiyya barracks, but the tanks were never in there. I didn't even know. So that was the object, to run like hell and get back to your barracks. So wherever they were.
So this is the retreat in 1941.
That's right.
You're away in Cairo on leave when this is basically happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Had you not had any action at all prior to that, before you went on your leave?
Oh, yes.
Can you recall any of that for me?
Well, basically, that's come up, and we got the reconnaissance. Mm. And this is where it came from. I'm thinking now. But that was the main object of them, reconnaissance, moving, chasing, and everything else. Harrying, if you like, if you got the opportunity. And this is what this, and they used to do the same to us. So you had these things biting at each other, having a good go. Agreed, they couldn't move with the crew, with the big tanks that the Germans had, as fast as we could with the little ones. So we used to go like mad and get out of shooting range, and then start all over again.
Did you get the opportunity to actually fire your gun?
Oh yes, oh yes.
Do you recall when that first happened?
It happened because we were trying to convince the jury somewhere on the desert, going up there, maybe going up to where we were, Eregelia. Mm-hmm. And it happened in trying to convince them that we were there, we were armed, we had tanks.
You were in strength, and you were there in strength.
Yeah, you had tanks, but they were only small ones. So what we did, had flash eliminators on the end of the machine guns, which were shaped like a cornet, you know. And what they did, when you took those off, unscrewed them, you were left with the muzzle there. And as soon as it fired, there was a sheet of flame come out. So did they think we had these bloody big guns there, you know? And that was when we were flying. And we never shied away from getting a burst away, purely to see if they would come and have a go at us, but where we were, you know, and let them know we were still there. So, action, we had one or two knocked out. An ordinary, everyday action, if like, not like the situation I described just a minute ago, or flying all over and firing their guns just didn't matter. They couldn't find out a good target anyway. So that there was a campaign which went sour in the end because we were knocked right away back and disintegrated completely and were taken away off the desert and replaced, hopefully, I don't know now, by someone else.
So Rommel, as I say, the Germans pushed you back, and you, as you say, you were ordered back, in effect, weren't you?
You were running, and it took a long time to stop.
Yeah. You must have seen some of your own tanks, in your own unit going up and brewing up, or what have you.
I didn't see them. But I did see them later. I didn't see them at the specific time it happened.
Were you hearing things through your radio?
They were shouts, more or less. It's all a mixture. And indeed, some of them radios were off, and they were just wanting to get back into some sort of organisation if they could, but they didn't. The worst one I saw was in a place called Buk Buk. And Buk Buk was in a hollow, right on the coast. It was in a hollow. And away from it in front were the Jerrys. No, it was the Italians. Jerry's hadn't arrived here then. We were just going up to the front. The Jerry's. And down below in this plane, the English were here, I don't know what squadron it was. I think it was the 4th Hussars. 4th Hussars. And the middle, which would be about, I don't know, maybe a mile, was Saltsea. You know, Saltsea is never dries up. It's always moving. And you can go there and you just go, it's just like a pool, then a jelly, you know. And there were 8 tanks in there which had been knocked out. And there were light tanks, like more or less the same as what we had. And what they'd done, the officers still thought about the old cavalry, you know, with the leggings on, and the brown suits, and the lanyards and whistles, and God knows how. And I was told about it, and they were told to charge. Now, this was the three people on the top of the hill, so they were in the South Sea. They didn't know what South Sea was, quite frankly. It was early, very early days. Went across there, what happens? Down the hill, straight into the plain, straight into the South Sea, and sit there and wait for them knocking hell out. And they were burnt down to their boots, down to their soles, their boots. Just couldn't get out. If they did get out, they were hammered one way or the other. And those tanks were, they were there the last time I was up there. Still, and that was years after, and that was still sitting down and getting the tanks.
Did that image worry you? Because
very.
In tanks, I mean, it must have very. Been a daily thing.
Not to the same extent as a married man with 2 kids, and I knew those, and they were the worriers. I was 21 years of age, so really, it had been good up to then because it had been a complete change to what to where I lived at home, and what I did at home. Everything I lived at home. My grandma's actually lived at my grandma's, and everything I did there was completely changed when I joined the army, when I was called up and went through all this and right through training and everything else, and I'd forgotten about where I worked at Headley's, forgotten about it, and I'd forgotten mainly about the way of life there. I had a different way of life. And if I got shot, well, I got shot, but keep out of the bloody way, you know. That was the whole thing.
Must have been a great fear for a tank man, though, that the German superior armour, superior guns, and you could be trapped inside a steel case.
Didn't have a chance. I mean, what in the Christie cruisers, which were English tanks. Christie cruisers. And they were fast. You could get 15, 20 miles an hour out of them. But they only had a 2-inch gun on. 1 2-inch gun. Well, the other ones are coming away 85 millimetres. Bang! They didn't have a chance, really.
And yet they kept going.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Christie cruisers did. And we kept going as much as we could. But later, about 1942, the Lend-Lease Americans came along, and they shipped in and all the jeeps, all the tanks, all the guns. They just kept pushing it in, which cost our country a lot of money, of course, because we Americans weren't in the war properly then, so we had to pay for all these things going in.
So while you were active in those early stages in the desert, and you went to El Agheil and then you pushed back again, were you aware who was commanding the army? Was it Wavell who was in command at that time?
No, I think it was Auchinleck. I couldn't put a date on, but I think it was Auchinleck. There was John Gott, who was there for a while. He was killed.
Did you form any opinion, or did you have any time to form any opinion on your army commander whilst you're having a victory and then having a defeat?
Got used to it. I think we forgot about headquarters, which was of all places, Shepherd's Hotel in Cairo. And that's why the blokes in the blues used to say, hey, lucky buggers, if we worked it again, swanning around in the hotel, beautiful offices and God knows what else. Yeah. So that was it. I never even thought about it.
When the Germans and Italians attacked and you went on into the withdrawal, long withdrawal back to Egypt in effect, was it just a race? Were you racing away all the time just to keep ahead of them or what?
Yeah, you couldn't stop. You couldn't stop. If you did, you were overtaken by the Germans. And that's why they got as far as Alamein.
So now Alamein's it's mid 42, July 42.
Yeah, where they're coming. That was the first push they made with us. And then we would push them back again. Because what it was, it was schoolboy stuff, really. Because the information coming about the Germans was that they had 88mm tanks. And they just rolled on, bang, rolled on. And while they were rolling on, they got so far, and they were having jobs getting petrol in. Mm. They were having jobs getting ammunition in, because they were too far removed from their depots. Then what would happen is, we had a chance then, holding them, to fill up and push them back. And what happens? We've got nothing left.
Were you and your unit involved in the Gazala line that was in April, May of 1942,
that would be before that, I think.
Yeah.
Because you've got to think in terms of them leaving then, you know, this is the time when they were knocked out to hell, when everything got knocked out. And eventually, I finished up in the barracks on my own. Being out there, we were soldiers there, it was a proper army barracks, Egyptian army barracks.
Was this down in Cairo? In the canal area?
In Cairo. Yeah. And I finished up in Cairo, in the things. I didn't know where they were. I didn't know where the third assault had gone to. They'd lost the tanks. I didn't know what it was. And eventually, and I can't recall how I would get away from the Abbasiyah barracks. And I didn't like it there anyway. It was all right. It was cosy, you know. But the bloody beds were thick of bugs. I had beds. And they were thick of bugs. And they were just tubing beds, you know. And they were full of flies. Oh, God. But anyway, I can't recall how I got from Abbasiyah barracks to a place where holding place between Cairo and the canal.
Do you know what date this would be?
It must have been early on. 1940 we arrived, 1941. It must have been late 41, early 42. Yeah, it'd be about early 42, as far as I can.
This must have been the main Rommel attack, yeah. But which ended on the Gazala line, actually, up the desert. But you kept going back.
Yeah. He was pushed away then.
Mm-hmm.
He was pushed away.
Oh, so you pushed him back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
He was pushed back. But I wasn't involved in that then. I was. I went back to join the Third Hussars. And really, I was only attached to them. Yeah. I wasn't one of them.
So was this rejoining the first, Third Hussars again?
This was going into the Third Hussars.
From this holding camp that you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. But that's where they were.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, from there, we went to Cyprus. They gave us a rest. We went to Cyprus. And this is where it all happened again. Because Cyprus, they didn't have enough tanks to do anything. I think they had three or four, something like that. Didn't have tanks, Cyprus. And that's where eventually they were living it up in Cyprus, Third Hussars, what there were of them. Have you been to Cyprus? No, it's all right then. But we went to Cyprus and we were out there in Nisenots. This is really comfortable, you know, Nisenots and God knows what else. Sleeping on a bed. Albeit a bit hard, but nevertheless, it was all there. And then they were still there, and oh, I forget now. I've got to put it in between. That's right. After that skirmish down below, and they got it sorted out with the Germans, and things more or less settled down of having a go at him, and him having a go at us. They took A squadron away from the 3rd Hussars, gave them tanks, and sent them to the island, Crete. Sent them to Crete because the Jerries were threatening to come into Crete. So that was it. And after that, I don't remember seeing anything regarding the 3rd Hussars, because base depot Mardi said, well, show the bloody people in there. There's Corporal Reed up there swanning himself around, not doing anything.
This is in Cyprus. You were in Cyprus and, as you say, not doing anything.
This is Cairo.
Before we move to that instance, what was it like in Cyprus? Whereabouts were you?
Just outside Nicosia, Athalassa Farm.
And what were you doing?
Nothing. That's a misstatement, really. They had a little exchange there with about 10 lines on, and I used to teach the lads how to use the exchange, and that was all. That was all I did. There was nothing.
How did you get on with the Cypriots?
Not bad. Not bad. The Cypriots were okay, you know. We weren't in direct contact with them, except if we went down to Nicosia in the evening or at night and had a few beers. But they were all there, and transport was enough, lorries and things like that. No defences. God knows what would have happened if the Germans had sent even just a couple of tanks over. They would have cleared up, you know. It was like that. We were stripped bare, within reason. Stripped bare as far as fighting was concerned. That was Cyprus. And sooner or later, something had to happen. They got to know I was there, or they realised who I was and what I was doing and where I was. And that where I was no good to them, because they were waiting for more people to be sent up into North Africa or the desert.